Today is Thursday, September 2nd, and you're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinua Adofo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, U.S. vows revenge against Islamic State Afghan affiliate.
War is hard. It's vicious. It's brutal. It's unforgiving. And yes, we all have pain and anger.
Plus, millions face acute water shortage in Lebanon.
The municipal water system is no longer working, and bottled water in the market is far too expensive for many. The mosque is the only source for many.
Also, partial power restored in U.S. storm-ravaged state of Louisiana. Our top story today is in Afghanistan. The Taliban has surrounded the only remaining province resisting its rule, a senior leader said on Wednesday, calling on rebels to negotiate a settlement. In a recorded speech addressed to Afghans in Panjshir, senior Taliban leader Amir Khan Mottaki called on the rebels to put down their weapons. The Taliban have declared an amnesty for all Afghans who worked with foreign forces during the past two decades, but crowds fearing reprisals have continued to flock to the borders in an attempt to flee the country. Mottaki said the Taliban had made many efforts to negotiate with leaders of the opposition forces in Panjshir without any result. Taliban forces are making preparations around the Panjshir Valley, and there is no reason to fight, Mottaki said. The remarks came after at least seven Taliban fighters were killed during an attempt to advance into the valley, according to resistance leaders. A spokesman for the National Resistance Front of Afghanistan in the Panjshir Valley said on Wednesday, Taliban forces had launched an offensive 2 days ago and had been attacking in three or four different areas, but have so far been pushed back. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin has vowed revenge against Islamic State Afghan affiliate at a time of America's choosing. The terror group staged a suicide attack against Kabul's airport in the last days of withdrawal, killing 13 U.S. service members and at least 170 others. As VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Barb reports, the U.S. isn't completely done with Afghanistan.
Pride, pain, and anger on display at the Pentagon Wednesday, 2 days after the last U.S. troops left Afghanistan.
Now, we have just concluded the largest air evacuation of civilians in American history. It was heroic. It was historic.
War is hard. It's vicious. It's brutal. It's unforgiving. And yes, we all have pain and anger. And when we see what has unfolded over the last 20 years and over the last 20 days, that creates pain and anger.
A State Department official admitting Wednesday that in addition to more than 100 American citizens left behind, a, quote, majority of special immigrant visa applicants were also not evacuated, a group consisting of Afghans who helped the United States and their families. The Taliban again control Afghanistan, with General Mark Milley acknowledging the U.S. might need to coordinate with them further.
This is a ruthless group from the past, and whether or not they change remains to be seen. And as far as our dealings with them at that airfield or in the past year or so, in war, you do what you must in order to reduce risk to mission and force, not what you necessarily want to do.
Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin vowed revenge against the Islamic State Afghanistan affiliate at a time of America's choosing. The terror group staged a suicide attack against Kabul's airport in the last days of the withdrawal, killing 13 U.S. service members and at least 170 others. The Taliban are bitter enemies of the Islamic State offshoot that staged the attack. But the White House is in no hurry to pursue an alliance.
There's no rush to recognition from the United States or any country we've spoken with around the world. It will be very dependent on their behavior and whether they deliver on what the expectations are of the global community.
Expectations include letting Americans and at-risk Afghans leave and respecting the human rights of women, minorities, and journalists. Carla Babb, VOA News. The Pentagon.
With U.S. troops gone from Afghanistan and Kabul under Taliban control, hundreds of journalists, many of them women, are seeking sanctuary. VOA's Esha Sarai has this report.
Barely a month ago, Storai Karimi and her husband were reporting from the front lines of Herat. Today, they are hiding in Pakistan, having fled Taliban rule.
خانه به خانه دنبال خبرنگارا میگردن و همونطور که خود شما به جریان هستین بیش از 200 خبرنگار فعال مدنی هنوز نامعلوم است وضعیتشان پس این نشان دهنده ای است که خبرنگار مسئول نیست و از همه مهمتر برای خانم های خبرنگار اجازه کار در رسانه ها نداده
International media organizations say getting their Afghan colleagues to safety has been a difficult task. The International Women's Media Foundation says the press freedom community is fielding thousands of requests.
This is certainly, in the time that we've been doing emergency assistance, the biggest, most complicated, most difficult operation to try to support journalists who are in immediate danger of losing their lives that we've ever been involved with.
Even those who managed to flee say their lives are still in danger.
از حالت روحی روانی خوب برخوردار نیستیم و هنوز هم در نگرانی بسیار زیاد به سر میبریم.
As journalists try to find safe passage out of Afghanistan or go into hiding for their own safety, many fear an impending blackout of information across the country.
It's a really terrible conundrum, right? Which is that if the journalists leave Afghanistan, then nobody knows what's happening inside, but if they don't leave, they may not be left alive to actually do their reporting.
With US and NATO troops gone, the concern turns to those left behind.
بنان چگونه ما میتونیم که مسئول میمونیم؟ اصلا نهاد وجود نداره. ما در شهر هستیم که فعلا حاکمیتش به دست نیروی است که او سالهای سال در کوه‌ها جنگیده. او چطور میتونه به مسئولیت جانی ما فکر کنه؟ اونا فقط کشتن و خون دیدن.
Isha Sarai, VOA News.
VOA Acting Director Yolanda Lopez says the agency is working to help Afghan journalists who have been working with VOA over the years and their families to leave the country. Among the growing numbers of Afghans arriving in Turkey after fleeing the Taliban are those who fought alongside NATO forces. As Dorian Jones reports for VOA from Istanbul, they are now looking for help from the countries they once worked for.
Yusuf, an Afghan military helicopter pilot, shows photos of the NATO forces he fought alongside against the Taliban. That collaboration, he says, made him a target, forcing him to flee to Istanbul just before the Taliban seized Kabul. Now he's seeking a visa to one of the NATO countries.
Our advisors, they were from British, they were from US, they were from Germans. We worked shoulder by shoulder in making some plan against insurgents. Right now, we are in the situations we can't stay in Afghanistan because all our database, our info, there's in the hand of the Taliban.
Listening to Yusuf is his friend, also an Afghan pilot, who does not want to be identified. He came to Istanbul 3 months ago after receiving Taliban death threats. Showing his numerous visa applications to NATO countries, he says Yusuf could be in for a long wait.
And I tried Germany, then I tried Canada. I still haven't got luck with any. I've worked with Germans, I've worked with British. We worked side by side, planning missions, doing missions. But when there's a bad time for you, if you don't get a help from a friend or a colleague, it's very disappointing and very frustrating.
The Afghan pilots live in Istanbul's Zeytinburnu district, dubbed by locals Afghan Burnu because of its large Afghan population. Many here fled the Afghan conflict years ago. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan is ruling out taking in any new wave of Afghans, saying the country is already hosting nearly 5 million refugees, mainly from the Syrian civil war. The Turkish government is even refusing to allow NATO countries to use Turkey to process Afghans seeking visas.
The Turkish governments are not registering them inside Turkey, or they can't apply for asylum inside Turkey. So when they are living in Turkey, they are living as illegal refugees, as illegal people.
The two pilots are staying on tourist visas, which will soon expire. In the last few days, Yusuf's friend got some good news that his wife and three children were evacuated from Kabul, and the United States is now looking into his case. But Yusuf thinks about his wife and two children still trapped in Kabul.
I'm just thinking about my family. If they are safe, I'm safe right now. First of all, I think about their life, nothing else.
While neither man knows when or if they will leave Istanbul and be reunited with their families, both say they are lucky to have escaped the Taliban. Dorian Jones of VOA News, Istanbul.
The UN Children's Agency, UNICEF, has warned that more than 4 million people in Lebanon, many of them children, could face a critical shortage of water in the coming days. The water crisis comes on top of fuel crisis and a plummeting currency as Lebanon's economy collapses and plunges millions into poverty. For VOA, Ancha Vora reports from Beirut.
Every day, the residents of Ras Al Naba, a middle-class neighborhood in Beirut, line up for hours to get free drinking water from a mosque and to purchase it for other needs from local water tanker owners.
It is a catastrophe. A catastrophe. We have nothing.
A fuel crisis in the hottest month of the year has not just turned off the air conditioners, but also the pumps that distribute water throughout the country.
We have no water, no cooking gas, and no fuel for the generator. We only get electricity 3 to 4 hours a day.
The municipal water system is no longer working, and bottled water in the market is far too expensive for many. The mosque is the only source for many. For cleaning and washing, people rely on privately owned water tankers. Ibrahim Kobrusil, the sheikh of the mosque, blames the country's political elite for leaving the people thirsty.
Since the beginning of the revolution and the financial crisis, there has been an electricity crisis, and because of it, water is not being pumped to major tanks that supply houses with water. It is a political issue, not the people's fault.
With Lebanon running dry, local UNICEF official Etty Higgins says the poor will be disproportionately affected.
We saw the collapse, more or less, of the national electricity grid on the 16th of August. And since then, we think that at least 2.8 million people have been affected by the water shortages in the country. And unfortunately, some of these are the most vulnerable population groups.
UNICEF is getting ready to deploy rapid response teams in collaboration with local agencies to provide water and emergency supplies of fuel to run water pumps in several parts of the country. Also, the Iranian-backed Hezbollah is promising emergency oil deliveries, a dangerous proposal, some say, that could bring on U.S. sanctions and stoke tensions with Israel. For the thirsty people of Lebanon in the blistering heat, the options are becoming fewer. Archie Wara for VOA News, Beirut.
This is the Voice of America. Indian authorities are restricting public movements and cut communications in disputed Kashmir after the death of separatist leader Syed Ali Gilani. Armed police and soldiers patrolled tense barricaded streets while most Kashmiris remained in their homes. The crackdown and near blackout of communications are tactics India has used to ward off mass protests in the region, which both India and Pakistan claim. U.S. Envoy John Kerry says China needs to expand its efforts to reduce carbon emissions to hold back the rise in global temperatures. The State Department said Kerry told Chinese Vice Premier Han Jiang in a virtual meeting that there is, quote, no way, unquote, for the world to solve the climate crisis without China's, quote, full engagement and commitment, unquote. The African Union's COVID-19 envoy says vaccine doses produced by a plant in South Africa will no longer be exported to Europe after the intervention of South Africa's government. Strive Masiwa told reporters Thursday that South African drug manufacturer Aspen, which has a contract with Johnson & Johnson to assemble the ingredients of its COVID-19 vaccine, will no longer ship vaccine doses out of the continent, and that millions of doses warehoused in Europe will be returned to the continent.
This is Science in a Minute.
Astronomers have spotted an accident. It's a brown dwarf located about 50 light years away. A brown dwarf was supposed to be a star, but was unable to gain enough mass to sustain the needed hydrogen fusion at its core to become a full-fledged star. The astronomers gave it its nickname because it was detected by accident and that it's not like any of the other brown dwarfs observed so far. A study published in the astrophysical journal Letters suggests the accident might be 10 billion to 13 billion years old, which is about double the average age of other known brown dwarfs. If it is that old, the astronomers say the accident could have formed early in our galaxy's history and have a different chemical makeup. If so, the scientists propose that there are probably many more of these ancient brown dwarfs nearby in the galaxy. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. The International Labor Organization reports more than 4 billion people globally have no social protection at a time when the COVID-19 pandemic is wreaking havoc among their lives and livelihoods. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The ILO's World Social Protection Report 2020-2022 reveals the extent to which COVID-19 has devastated the world of work. It exposes the inequality between the rich countries that are beginning to rebound from the economic distress of the pandemic and the developing countries that remain deeply mired in poverty. Additionally, the report finds less than half the world's population, or 47%, is covered by at least one social protection benefit, while 4.1 billion people, or 53%, have no income security at all. The report highlights some of the significant regional inequalities in social protection. For example, ILO Director General Guy Ryder notes in Europe and Central Asia, 84% of the population has at least one social protection benefit. This compared to Africa, where just 17.4% of the population has coverage.
The vast majority of children globally, 73.6%, receive no social protection benefits. Only 44.9% of pregnant and childbearing women receive a cash maternity benefit. Just 39% of the working age population is legally entitled to sickness benefits. Think what that means in pandemic conditions.
While most retired workers receive an old age pension, the report finds their benefits often are not enough to make ends meet. Ryder says gaps in social protection, such as the lack of sickness and employment benefits, can undermine other essential policy priorities, such as those surrounding public health.
It is that the crisis has confirmed the urgent need for a basic level of social security for all, what we call a social protection floor. We must do more to ensure that everyone has a legally guaranteed access to adequate social protection throughout their life cycle.
The report outlines several priority actions to achieve this. It calls for national social security policies to be reinforced and for adequate social protections to be extended to workers in all types of employment. The ILO says gaps in social protection must be closed, especially for women, for people in the informal economy, and for migrant workers. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
South Africa's jobless rate has hit 34%, among the highest in the world, as the country's economy is stifled by the coronavirus pandemic. Black women are among the worst affected, with 41% unemployed. Linda Giftash reports from Johannesburg.
Rebecca Mwale has been sitting in her Johannesburg apartment searching for jobs to no avail since January. The recent graduate from a supply chain management program was already working in the sector when the pandemic struck, and she found herself laid off.
I apply almost every day, but the responses I'm getting, I'm sure I've applied more than 30 times since, but I've only gotten like two responses back. There's not much out here. I even started applying outside the country.
About 558,000 South Africans lost their jobs last quarter, a period marked by strict COVID-19 lockdowns. The government says the number of job seekers has reached 7.8 million, while an additional 3.3 million people have given up searching. While the pandemic is taking an economic toll, economists like Efficient Group's Davi Root says it's compounded with a historically bleak situation.
I don't think we've turned a corner. I think unemployment is likely to continue creeping up. And unfortunately, it's women that will bear the brunt of all this.
Two decades of experience as a flight attendant for South Africa's national carrier didn't spare Charity Mokomane from job cuts last year. She never dreamed of retraining, but she says she didn't want to leave her husband as the family's sole breadwinner.
When you keep hearing places are shedding jobs, then you think, oh, you know, I can't. I just decided to maybe try and look at other avenues of making money.
She adopted her mother's passion for baking and started selling cakes from her home. Economists say this type of informal entrepreneurship isn't captured in employment data. It means people like Mokomane are still getting by.
And I feel also slightly more in control of what happens to my life. And whatever happens, people have to eat.
But for young job seekers like Mwale, the disruption has curtailed dreams of building a career. The stress has also taken a toll on her mental health.
I did not envision myself depressed and sitting at home It was not in my plans. I did not even imagine.
South Africa's economy did grow in the first quarter of this year, but economists warn unemployment will remain high for the foreseeable future. Faced with uncertainty, Mwale says all she can often do is pray. Linda Giftash for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Power has been restored to about 11,000 residents of hurricane-ravaged New Orleans, but it will likely be days before the rest of the city and almost 1 million customers across the state of Louisiana have full power. VOA's Mariama Diallo has this update on the devastation left by Hurricane Ida.
I need help. If anybody out there can help me, please do.
70-year-old Theophilus Charles lost everything when Hurricane Ida ripped through Louisiana on Sunday.
Everything is gone. My walls, my roof, my ceiling, all my clothes, furniture, appliances, everything.
Charles, who lives in Uma, Louisiana, says he went through all previous major hurricanes and thought he would stay and ride this one out.
They just start falling apart, blowing away on me. I ain't got a dry spot in the house. All I got is I got a backpack with a few clothes in it in case I had to run out there somewhere. But I went nowhere, didn't know where, so I just stayed here.
At Crown Point, a small city in Louisiana, rescuers used boats and helicopters Monday to reach people trapped by floodwaters.
Hey, we were in Crown Point, but it's pretty bad. A lot of water. I've lived back here for 13 years and haven't seen it this high.
New Orleans residents on Monday were grateful that Ida was not like Hurricane Katrina, which devastated the city in 2005.
It was pretty intense. A lot of wicked winds. Luckily, no flooding. That's the main difference between this storm and Katrina. Like with Katrina, we got about like 2 feet of water in here that just stayed for about a week or two. But this was just a lot of wind damage and no power.
More than 1 million customers were left without power. Louisiana's Governor John Bel Edwards said the state's levees, heavily revamped since Katrina, worked better this time around. But he said the storm still inflicted tremendous damage and warned people against returning in the short term.
If you have evacuated, now is not the time to return unless and until your parish informs you that it is okay to do so. Businesses aren't open. Stores aren't open. Schools aren't open.
Edwards said for now, residents need to put as little demand as possible on the water systems and the electric grid. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
Authorities say at least 8 deaths were reported in New York City and New Jersey as relentless rain from the remnants of Hurricane Ida sent the New York City area into a state of emergency. The storm carried Thursday into New England with threats of more tornadoes. Police in New York City reported 7 deaths, including a 50-year-old man, a 48-year-old woman, and a 2-year-old boy who were found unconscious and unresponsive inside a home. Flooding from the storm also caused the death of a teenager near Washington, D.C. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mark Boyabaro, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinny Ruffo in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great evening.
Host Larry London for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, African dumbolo and makossa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. and it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20.